Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. Today, Richard Tooley, Dr. Richard Tooley, is here with me, and we are going to discuss the topic of music. Music has been one of those things that you never can get away from. It's always there. Some type of music. You walk into a store, there's music. You go to a church service, there's music. Everywhere we hear music. And I think it's going to be a very educating topic because Richard Tooley has studied extensively with people like John Gilbertson and has a very trained tenor voice and sings in the area, has been in operas and cantatas. And, you know, you're here with us and you've had this expertise and we haven't really tapped into it.
Well, you have your own expertise. So you might want to describe a little bit of that. I think that you also have been trained in music and are certified to teach music. Is that not so?
That's correct. I thought I would be a music teacher, so that's why I studied as extensively as I did, but later changed to education in general. But I am certified, and I know it's a very important aspect of any school program is to have a good music program.
I believe that music is quite underrated in terms of development.
Yes, and it's the first program in any school that's having a budget crunch. It'll be the first program that is annihilated, so to speak. So it is important. Tell me, Richard, what is some of the research that has been done showing how music really helps us learn and helps the mind develop?
Well, one of the first books that I've read on the topic was written by Daniel Pink on whole brain thinking. And I went to a seminar that he provided, and it was a very interesting one. And he talked there about how the physician students at Harvard University were required to take music and art courses so that they weren't simply thinking out of just one half of their brain, because they had a very technical education curriculum, and music helped develop the other side of their brain with the idea that their capacity for conceptualization would be much greater. And that becomes important because sometimes while all of the symptoms of a diagnosis might look one way, when you have a chance to synthesize that, to conceptualize it, you come up with different thoughts. So I went from there and began to look around and say, okay, so what is it with music? And some of the research that I have come up with is, first of all, music does affect both sides of the brain. You can simultaneously simulate the right and left hemispheres of the brain by playing an instrument or by singing. So there you go. Not only listening to music helps you, but performing music, learning a new musical instrument, learning how to sing, you will end up exercising both halves of your brain, which is very, very powerful. And there are statistics that show that children who are in music programs tend to, over the long haul, do better than children who are not in some kind of a music program.
Now, we know that Lucifer, the father of lies, was the ultimate musician. And do you think he is working to prevent music education in schools or to maybe lessen its importance to families? And that's why we're having this show. We're saying this is an important aspect of your child that you need to guard and you need to enhance and you need to provide opportunities.
Yes, very much so. I want one caveat placed in here. Not everyone can hold a tune in a bucket. Some people just simply cannot sing, but they might be able to play a musical instrument. They might be able to produce rhythm and mm-hmm. So they could be in a percussion section. They could learn. I'm not suggesting that you go out and buy a trap set for your child now unless you want to go start craving mad. But there are the needs to learn rhythm. There's needs for other forms of instruments. And there's always listening. Listening to music is very, very valuable for someone who can't find anything else to do. But I think learning music one way or another becomes important, and especially being able to analyze the music and say what's good about it, what's bad about it, and figure out how it affects you. You know, some of the things they talk about is the emotional responses to music, because they've discovered that music bypasses a lot of things and goes straight to your emotions. One of the first things they talk about is the limbic system. Now, it's so powerful that emotions can change how you think.
Wow, I have that on a personal level. If I go into a room and there's sad music playing, I'm sad. My brain knows that that is a sad sound.
Yeah, you have positive emotions. They can create love, humor. They can create higher order thinking skills or facilitate higher order thinking skills. I remember in one of my music appreciation classes, they talked about Rimsky-Korsakov, and he, when he put out his Rite of Spring, the audiences rioted.
Yes.
And that's pretty amazing that music had that kind of an effect on them. So music is very powerful. Now, one other thing it does, music can produce serotonin.
Wow.
Serotonin makes you happy.
Yeah, so you could actually become really attached to certain kinds of music.
Yeah. Now, serotonin isn't quite the endorphin that you can get from, you know, say you go out and run 25 miles and then suddenly get that euphoric high. But serotonin certainly helps keep you in a positive frame of mind, which is very important to have. People who are not in a positive frame of mind tend to not get much done because mm-hmm. they end up trapped in their own feelings.
Yes.
Of self-pity.
Okay, so we're talking about music in general, and I have to look at the current act of worship that seems to be prevalent in the United States and other countries, where we have this contemporary Christian music phenomena, and the praise and worship service. So how do you think music is impacting that?
It's dividing churches, quite frankly.
It really is.
Churches have a very difficult time actually being community because you have two separate communities that end up going to a lot of churches. There are churches that try to blend contemporary music with a traditional music service, you know, traditional service music. They try and blend them. But it's kind of like neither fish nor fowl then, and I don't think it does a whole lot for people when they try and blend them. Usually they end up having two services. One service is contemporary music and one service is traditional music.
Yes. Now, the true heart of worship, because that's what it's classified as, is worship, the worship service. What is the true heart of worship?
Well, that's a real good question, because when you start talking about worship, is worship one-dimensional or multidimensional? You know, one thing I appreciate about most African-American services is that their worship is not simply a head worship. It's heart, head, mind, body, soul. Everything is involved in their worship. And our worship's, we may have it different culturally, but I think when you get into worship and you really want to define it, it must involve all parts of who, what makes you who you are.
Yes, yes. Well, we have to take a break right here, but when we come back, we're going to look at some of the things that maybe we never thought of before. It's become such a part of the culture, but is it the right thing? We'll be right back.
Thank you.
I'm Wes Dauphinbaugh, author of 21 Ways to Forgive. One Sunday in church, I saw a man who I thought would apologize to me, but he did not. I said to myself, he's a bigger turkey than I thought he was, and God convicted me. I said, Lord, don't you remember that Jesus said if your brother sins against you, rebuke him, and if he repents, forgive him? But he hasn't repented, and that's why I haven't forgiven him. God spoke, you're just like a man that went down to the beach. A seagull flew over and had a bowel movement that landed right on the man's nose. He looked at the bird as it flew away and yelled, you dirty bird, you, I'm going to leave this right here on my face till you come back and wipe it off. Then God said, bitterness is showing on your face and you can't hide it. I said, how do I get it off? God said, forgive him before he asks. Friends, the birds of life aren't coming back to make it right. Why wear bitterness on your face? Get a copy of 21 Ways to Forgive. It's fully illustrated. Contact me at encouragementexpert.com or email me at encouragementexpert@gmail.com. God bless you.
You've been listening to Education Currents. Be sure and like us on our Education Currents Facebook page and consider joining MRG Media in this radio ministry. You can call us anytime at 301-824-3162. That's 301-824-3162. Or write to MRG Media at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. That's P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. Welcome back to Education Currents. I'm here with Dr. Richard Tooley, and we're discussing music. Before we go any further, I have to know the answer to this question. Is music amoral or is it neutral? How would you describe music in general as far as, is there a bad kind of music? Is there a good kind of music?
That's been a debate that's gone on for probably 40 years now, since the 60s, since the invention of the rock and roll music. That debate has gone on. There's a generation of people who are dying off now that felt that it was anathema to listen to rock and roll, though swing was probably okay for them and jazz was probably okay for them. But I think we can look at how music affects us a little bit real quickly here and notice some of the differences that have come out of different research studies. And then we can draw some conclusions from that in terms of how music, whether music is amoral or not. You know, when you start talking about music, for instance, there's something called the Mozart effect. Okay, they have discovered that young people or people in general who listen to Mozart's music or Bach's music, classical music, like 40 minutes a day, have much better cognitive skills than those that don't.
Mm.
So it's worthwhile of looking to look at that. Okay, when they took a look at music in animals, for instance, lab rats showed a natural disposition towards music. So they connected two boxes for these lab rats, and they connected them, and they played Bach's air on a G string into one box, and in the other box they played rock and roll music. And most of the rats chose to go to the box with Bach's music in it, box with Bach's music in it. Even when they switched the music around from one box to the other, the rats migrated towards the classical music as opposed to the rock music. And so then when they put rats in a maze, and this is something that's very interesting, when they put rats in a maze, those that followed the classical music exited the maze quicker and easier than those that chose the path of rock. That's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that were frequently exposed to classical music had physically more developed brains.
Wow.
Than those that were not being exposed to that.
Mm.
Now, they tried it with plants, too. And this is something that's interesting, too. Who would have thought? Plants don't have brains.
Yeah.
But plants that were exposed to classical music thrived. They grew better. Plants exposed to rock music withered and died.
Mm.
Now, what the implications are for humans, I'm not sure, but one of the things that I would suggest could be an implication is, first of all, you're not going to wither and die if you listen to rock music. We've already proven that. But I think the one thing that we could get out of that is that certain types of music create more confusion than clearness. That's an important factor. If we wanted to talk about moral, amoral, that's difficult. But if we have a capacity to cloud someone's senses because of something that they're hearing, then that could be more dangerous as opposed to clearing someone's senses. It would make it so that people would not be able to discern what was right or what was wrong maybe easier. People would not be able to discern the path that they should be following easier. There may be a numbing effect to them that numbs their brain.
It brings to mind when Moses, after he had spent the time with God, and he and Joshua are coming down from the hill, and Joshua says, "I hear the sound of war in the camp." To him, it sounded like war. And then when they round the bend, they see that it's not war. They are worshiping the golden calf. They are dancing around the golden calf and worshiping. So even at that point in the Bible, we can look at there has to be good music and there has to be bad music. There is music that is inspired from God and there is music that is inspired from Satan. Is it possible that he has infiltrated our church today through music?
I think it's possible that he has done that. Obviously, a split in the church would show that there is certainly, maybe if it's just cultural, it could be just cultural, but that split in the church over music does indicate that there is something else that's there that we need to be looking at. I think we have to be careful. I don't want to condemn anyone because there's people who would say, well, if Jesus' name is being called, then we shouldn't get in the way of that.
But we can hold it up to the scriptures. We can hold it up to the scriptures if there's immodesty involved, if there's sensual movement involved, if there's rhythms that interfere with your own heart rate. And I have walked into services where it was so loud, even the volume, our ears aren't meant to handle the volume. So just on the surface, there's a few things we can look at. The volume of the music, the rhythm, the immodesty of the dress, those that are performing it, the sensual movement. Have I just taken my sensual rock and roll desires and brought them into the church and have just changed the words and now they're okay? I'm still now speaking to my flesh.
You could move there. You can also look at different types of music. For instance, most of the Christian contemporary music seems to have a very repetitive nature to it. If you take a look at a traditional hymn, you will find a good scripture reference to it, and it's usually more than one verse, and it's usually more than two or three words out of that one verse that are in there. But an awful lot of contemporary Christian music tends to repeat the same over and over and over and over again. And that reminds me an awful lot of the Eastern religion's method of repetition used in their chants.
Yes. Well, I know that I've gone into worship services and they've been playing drums, just, you know, maybe one drum, like a bongo kind of drum. And for me, it was uncomfortable because growing up in Africa and hearing the drums of what I knew were pagan rituals being done in the villages and stuff, it's hard to have brought that into, you know, I lift your name on high. Lord, I want to sing your praises. You know, it just doesn't seem congruent. At the same time, I recognize that this has permeated every church I go to. There's some kind of praise and worship service. Every single church, every single denomination.
Yeah, the attempt to find the gimmick to get membership into churches is a big thing. And it works in some cases, But in many others, I don't know that they're gaining as much traction as they think they would get, because they find out that people come not just for the music, they're coming for what they get out of it. And it's ironic because there's plenty of studies out there that show that the ineffectiveness of sermons.
Yes.
So there's much more that has to go with associating with people of like belief that goes on in the church. And I would think that you'd want to do it with as clear a mind as possible.
Yes, so you're not suggesting that we do away with the praise and worship. The praise and worship service is pretty evangelical in nature and is permeated the whole. You're not suggesting that contemporary Christian music be totally done away with?
No, I wouldn't suggest that. What I have found in most of the church services that I've gone to, and I've gone to quite a few since I perform in many, many churches, that the contemporary services, where churches are holding contemporary services, those services become very, very repetitive and very, very boring to me because there's no room for creativity in them. The music is generally always the same. You have the same instrumentation up there, the same singers up front, the same songs being sung. There is no real variety in them. They become repetitive over time. I've also noticed that there's a much higher level of emotion, or a certain type of emotion.
Or maybe excitement.
For instance, you can get, if you go to a high mass in a Catholic church or an Episcopal church, a high service, you will get a certain type of emotion that comes out of that. All of the sights, the sounds, everything will put you in a certain frame of mind. The same thing that happens in a contemporary service, they used to do these things, and they bring people up to a high level of emotional intensity, and then they bring it down, real down and subdued. And it opens up people's minds to be more accepting to whatever comes next. That can be good or bad, but to do that, somehow it seems to me that reasoning gets shunted to the back and emotion is shunted to the front. So somewhere in there is a balance. I think one of the things that should always be considered as a primary thing in this, a primary caveat, do not let your brain move out of being what's in control. The mind has to be in control over the body. The mind has to subject the emotions to it, not the other way around. And if that's what's happening, what you're looking for becomes clouded.
Yes. Well, we've come to the end of the show. I would recommend that you get the book called Why I Left the Contemporary Christian Music Movement by Dan Lucariani, who was a former worship leader and became very convicted that it was not for him. And it just helps you have balance. It gives you the insights that you might need to help your children make the right decisions. So we'll have one last thing to say, and that is keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.